talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I usual.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning and welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And I am hungover because we went to the St. Louis International Film Festival End of Fest Awards party last night. And if there's one thing I like more than movies, it's beer. If there's one thing I like more than beer, it's free beer. And the Urban Chestnut was flowing last night. Are you hungover, Michelle?
No, I'm great.
What? And Jim doesn't even drink.
I didn't drink, but I pulled a muscle, so I feel yuck.
Well, Jim doesn't drink, so I had to drink for me and for Jim. So it's Jim's fault that I am hungover this morning.
Guilty.
But I'm not going to let it slow me down. We got 54 minutes of movie talk, movie news, movie reviews to fill. So let's get started. Top 10 at the box office. I'm going to guess that despite Jim's scathing review, Love the Coopers knocked 007 off its top spot. Am I correct, Michelle?
With 188 million in 92 territories, including North America, the 24th Bond film was number one for the second consecutive weekend. Spectre debuted with an estimated 48.2 million this weekend in China. So far, Spectre has earned 543.8 million globally.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So made 35.
So it's still strong.
Was that about 50% from last week?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, that's still pretty great. Yeah, certainly more than enough to do number one, that's for certain.
The Peanuts movie also had a good second weekend, holding on to second place with an estimated 24.2 million and falling only 45%, being one of the only family-friendly flicks in theaters right now. Its domestic total now stands at 82.5 million.
Hmm. Yeah, it looks like most of the theaters I checked out are kind of pulling it from their late evening screenings.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to notice at a screening last week that the 9 o'clock screening was pretty much empty. So I guess they're pretty much.
So you saw it?
No, I stuck my head in and saw nobody was there. So I was just kind of curious. I would never do this.
Sure. Me neither.
At number three, Jim's favorite. Love the Coopers.
Love the Coopers.
Opening in 2,600 locations, the movie saw an estimated 8.4 million in ticket sales.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty dreadful. For how many? Did you say how many screens was that?
2,600.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So I think people could smell that coming.
It's a train wreck. Everything about even the titles. The title comes from a Christmas card that Diane Keaton signs. Love, comma, the Coopers. You know, love from the Coopers. But the movie's not called Love, comma, the Coopers. It's called Love the Coopers, which is a totally different. It's a demand.
It's like
love the Coopers, or else they can't even get the title right.
You will love us because we're so quirky.
Oh, it was awful.
Oh, jeez.
Well, at least there are a few more holiday films coming down the pike. So
mistletoe poisoning from that one.
And Tom can't wait for Krampus, so.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be fun.
It could be.
The Martian is number four at 6.7 million, with a domestic total of 207.4 million. Ridley Scott's movie about rescuing Matt Damon from Mars is the sixth biggest movie of the year.
Good.
Wow.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, still in the top five after months. That's great.
That bodes well with Academy voters, too.
Oh, yeah.
WB's The 33, The True Story of the Chilean Mining Incident of 2010, took fifth place, opening to an estimated 5.8 million in 2,400 cinemas. Even with its A-minus cinema score, Antonio Banderas' starring drama came in below predictions.
That is pretty low for that many screens.
I'm telling you, people do not want to see these true story. I mean, even though it's got a great ending, people are looking for comedies. They're looking for stuff like The Martian. Number six was Goosebumps with 4.7 million. At number seven, Bridge of Spies from Disney was in at 4.3 million. I'm going to just destroy this name. The Bollywood musical romance, Prem
Ratan Don Payo.
Thank you. Is number eight.
Oh, it's my favorite movie of the year.
It had an impressive weekend, earning $2.4 million in only 286 U.S. theaters.
Yeah.
Overseas, it picked up $31 million.
Mm-hmm.
The film is a local language production from 20th Century Fox and already ranks as one of the top grossing films of the year in India.
Well, getting in the top 10 is pretty impressive. Yeah. The general top 10, yeah.
I love when these little movies just pop up in the 10.
Yeah, we've never heard of or can't pronounce.
Yeah, there was a movie playing in one theater. I had to look up on IMDb, The Man in 3B. Did you see that? It was playing in one of the outer western, theaters, and I was like, I've never heard of that.
What was it?
It looks like it's sort of an urban black comedy.
A black cast.
Yeah, pretty much. But there were a couple of people I'd heard of in the cast. Uh-huh. But I was like, I saw that in the list of the papers. Like, what is that?
Is that a
horror film something, you know? But it's about a mysterious guy moves into an apartment building and how it affects all the tenants and all the ladies are interested in him and all that. So, yeah.
Okay. At number 9 was Hotel Transylvania 2 with $2.4 million. And at number 10 is The Last Witch Hunter. Lionsgate's movie took in $1.5 million.
Clinging on to it.
Spotlight is number 11, expanding to 60 theaters now. The movie brought in an impressive $1.4 million. That's good word of mouth.
60 theaters, that is very impressive.
Yeah. So and the final new... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's going to go a lot wider this Friday, right? Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah,
so. And the final new release coming in at number 12 is My All-American with $1.4 million.
It did well
in the South, college football, especially in Texas.
Sure.
A couple things of note. Angelina Jolie Pitt's movie By the Sea, which screened at the AFI Film Festival, received less than lackluster reviews. It opened at 10 locations with an estimated $95,000.
We're seeing that tomorrow afternoon. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does look a little dull. I mean, you about fall asleep in the trailer.
With the two biggest stars on the planet.
Yeah, that's that kind of this, proves that the it's not just star power, it's the subject matter and that sort of thing that really influences people. They won't just go if a familiar name is in it. Certainly, we proved that a few weeks ago with our Brand is Crisis, which is completely off the top 12 and burnt.
Yeah,
both with very familiar names.
And it doesn't even have their pictures on the poster.
Oh, the By the Sea poster.
No, it just has two hats.
Huh.
Oh, but Universal,
maybe that's why it's not doing so well.
That's interesting. That's an odd
choice. Universal wanted to keep Angelina Jolie Pitt happy after Unbroken, so they okayed the $10 million budget.
Yeah, I wonder if Marvel's still circling around her to direct the Captain Marvel flick.
Oh. We'll see.
We got the two of the most photogenic people on the planet, and you don't put them on the poster. Yeah.
But look at the subject matter again.
Yeah,
I tell you. And next weekend, The Hunger Games: Mockingjay 2 begins its worldwide takeover.
When's that open? This weekend, the 20th?
Yes. Beware, Mr. Bond.
Okay. Who will she pick? Will it be adorable Peeta or the hunky Liam Hemsworth?
And we're seeing that this week?
Some people are seeing it.
Melissa Howland.
Melissa Howland's going to review it for WeMovieGeeks.com. So look for that Thursday night or Friday morning.
Love Jennifer Lawrence, I don't care.
Right. Anything else you want to talk about as far as box office goes before we get into our reviews?
Nope, that's all she wrote.
All righty, let's start reviewing some of these movies. Jim saw My All-American, and you reviewed it for Weird Movie Geeks. How many stars did you give it?
I think I might have given it about 3, maybe 2.5.
All right, tell us about My All-American.
I'm offering you a scholarship to attend the University of Texas and play football.
Well, every other coach just thought I was too small to play.
I like the way you attack.
You will not regret giving me the chance, sir.
Give me my hand back now, son.
Sorry.
Well, it is, even though Aaron Eckhart is featured prominently in the posters, he is a supporting character in it. It is the story of Freddie Joe Steinmark, I guess is his full name. And he was a safety on the University of Texas Longhorns in the late 60s. He was much beloved. Actually, the film starts out with Aaron Eckhart and some kind of clumsy old age makeup being interviewed. And the woman interviewing him, it's 2010, is asking him, you coach this All-American. What player stands out? And he mentions Freddie. And she said, well, he wasn't an All-American. And he says, he was my All-American. This is the first directorial film from the fellow, I think his name is Pizzo. who had written Hoosiers and The Game of Their Lives and Rudy. Yeah. And it certainly owes a lot. He's in his wheelhouse with this one. Yeah. It's a true story, so everyone kind of, you know, down there knows what happened to Steinmark. But it's sort of overcoming tragedy, and, we get the disease there. So a couple of the reviewers were comparing it to Brian's song. Mm-hmm. I think you could even go back to Newt Rockne All-American in that the Steinmark character is pretty much the Gipper is Ronald Reagan's old part, George Gipp. Mm-hmm. And Freddie Steinmark is played by Finn Wittrock. Interesting name. And
it's like something out of the Flintstones.
And he's hunky, and he's a little short in stature. So, you know, you've got the Rudy thing where he's got to try harder and, you know, persevere. Mm-hmm. They show Robin Tunney in the poster quite a bit. She's his mother in it, and she seems way too young.
Oh, she could be my daughter.
That was jarring.
I know. And she's the supportive mother at home. Sarah Bolger is this young actress that's been in a few things that's playing his love interest. It's just too much. They're really putting the Steinmark character on a pedestal, and it kind of, you know, when somebody is portrayed as so good and wholesome, the only bad thing he does is he's stubborn. He won't go to a doctor when his girlfriend tells him to, and, you know, really has to be pressured to do it. I think he loses part of his humanity. You know, the complexity of him is completely sort of washed over, and they're just, you know, wanting the swelling music to come in, and they want to pummel your heartstrings, and it just seems a little much.
Yeah, so no cliche left unturned.
Oh, my goodness, my goodness. Yeah, and you're just kind of waiting for the game footage. A lot of slow motion in the game footage, a lot of heightened sound effects, so you hear the bone crunching and all that. You know, if you like the sports movies, I guess you'd enjoy that, but, if you're looking for something really interesting, I think I mentioned in my review the football scenes may be a primer for the Will Smith concussion movie coming up. You know, I kept on thinking of that. Like I say, some people were, you know, thinking of Brian's song. I was thinking back to the Lampoon documentary from a couple of months ago, in which they showed part of the radio sketch Terminal Football, in which Harold Ramis assigns diseases to each one of his team members during halftime. It's kind of sick and twisted. This is all stuff we've seen pretty much before.
Okay.
You know?
So Jim didn't really like My All-American too much. Not terrible, but that's one you could probably wait to see on Netflix or something.
Yeah, if you're a huge sports fan, you know, certainly, you know, rent it or check it out on a rainy day, like today at a matinee or something.
Okay, something very different, which Jim and I saw a month ago, was Spotlight.
I know there's things you cannot tell me, but I also know there's a story here, and I think everybody will hear about it.
Do you think your paper has the resources to take that on?
I do. Do you?
The Boston priests molested kids in 6 different parishes over the last 30 years. The church found out about it and did nothing.
Who, are you reviewing Spotlight, Jim?
I think Kate may be doing that for us. I think she's going to maybe see it tonight.
Yeah.
Yes. What do you think of Spotlight, Jim?
I think it is one of the year's best films. I think it is going to be, you're going to hear about it quite a bit at Oscar time. I think it's got a great cast, great strong performances. Of course, it is based on a true story also, and it really has a kinship to All the President's Men, even though, you know, this is set in the year 2000, 2001, and The President's Men is, you know, set in the early 70s. There's that sort of romanticized look at newspapers before the internet influence, really. It's just kind of creeping in Spotlight. Mm-hmm. And it's about, you know, these reporters played by Brian D'Arcy James, I think is the one of them, and Rachel McAdam, and Mark Ruffalo, who I do predict will get a supporting actor nomination. Also getting a supporting actor could be Michael Keaton. They're working under their new editor at the Boston Globe, who is played by Liev Schreiber, who is terrific in it. And John Slattery also. I think John Slattery plays Ben Bradley Jr., so there's that All the President's Men connection. Uh-huh. It's all set at the newspaper when they decide to tackle how the local you know, Catholic Church is sort of rearranging or shuffling around their priests when they get accused of molesting young children. Mm-hmm. Stanley Tucci does a great job in a cameo in it, playing a lawyer that's representing a lot of the victims. And Billy Crudup is in it. He's very good. Jamie Sheridan. So it's terrific. It's riveting. It's really, really well done. I'd say besides All the President's Men, you think of Zodiac from a few years mm-hmm. too. That's very similar to that. So this is the film I think the Trust wanted to be. And
truth.
Mm-hmm. Say trust. Yeah. Truth. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And
don't trust truth.
Yes. And this is, it's Todd McCarthy wrote and directed it. I believe he wrote it, and mm-hmm. I know he directed it. And this is a really, really, really well done film. So mm-hmm. I highly recommend it.
How many stars would you give it?
A 5.
Okay. I liked it as well. I think it's a very strong film. I didn't like quite as much as you did. I think I'd probably give it 4. I thought it was a very strong story and a very strong script and an important story. I thought it was slightly blandly executed. It was sort of all shot in, close-ups and medium shots, like something you might have seen on maybe a made-for-HBO movie. It also has this sort of tinkly piano score that I think would have been more at home on the small screen. It is uniformly excellently acted, no doubt, but I didn't think anybody really stood out. I thought everybody was really good, but you didn't go home saying, oh, so-and-so just stole that movie. But it is a really good movie. I also think it worked best when it sort of put a human face on these victims of these priests, which it didn't do enough. It did a little bit near the beginning, but then it was just a lot of scenes of the reporters running up and down the newsroom, you know, all sweaty with the pen and paper. And it did sort of echo All the President's Men. It seemed to want to be All the President's Men, but I don't think it was nearly at that level.
I've heard a lot of comparisons to that.
Yeah.
Oh.
But All the President's Men, was about taking down the president.
Correct.
And this one's really kind of about getting a gag order lifted. It's not quite as earth-changing as what these Woodward and Bernstein did. And I also think, these reporters, they sort of serve the same purpose, I think. Maybe if they would have focused on one, maybe if Mark Ruffalo had been the star and everybody else would have been supporting, so you had sort of one character to see the story through its eyes. But those are, nitpicky little things. It is a very good film and a great script, and it really catches you and grabs you and brings you along. And, yeah, I think it probably will get some Oscar nominations. I don't see it really winning anything, but the critics seem to like it. And
yeah, I think it's a really strong contender for Best Picture. I think it could happen. You know,
it's no
with the 10, maybe, now that they...
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, even taking home...
Even with the 5?
Even taking home the Best Picture.
Oh,
I don't see
that. Not in a million years. I don't think it's going to do any business, frankly.
Well, I don't think that matters to the Academy.
It'll
get a screenplay nod.
Yeah.
Mark Ruffalo.
I think Mark Ruffalo could be Michael Keaton. Somebody was saying that it could be Michael Keaton and Eddie Redmayne again for Best Actor, but I don't think Keaton's role in it. There's really not a lead actor in it. It's all pretty much supporting, which is fine.
I think the subject of reporters breaking a story is tough it's a tough sell, and it's tough to make it cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this movie really transcends that.
Well, President's Men had the whole thing with Deep Throat, which kind of gave it an air of mystery.
Yeah.
But like I say, this is a terrific film, and I think it'll get some nominations. That's for sure.
All right. So Jim thinks Spotlight is 5-star top 10 material. I think it's a very, very good film that falls slightly short of excellence. A movie that I do think is a 5-star material in one of my favorite movies I've seen so far this year is Legend.
London in the 1960s. Everyone had a story about the craze. They were twins.
Do you think we look alike?
Reggie was a gangster prince of the East End. Ron Cray was a one-man mob.
Your brother is violent, paranoid, schizophrenic. What I'm trying to tell you is that he's off his rocker.
Well, no.
In fact, I saw two movies over the weekend that I think are going to make my top 10 list, and they both feature David Thewlis, coincidentally.
Right. Yeah.
Legend is a true story of the Cray brothers, and these were these British gangsters in the 1960s, both played by Tom Hardy, both Reggie and Ronnie Cray. And Tom Hardy does just an amazing thing here by playing these two twins. It's almost like two actors are playing these guys. He delineates these two characters so perfectly. You know, Ronnie is sort of assured and talkative. talks fast and is very businesslike, where Reggie is crazy and mumbles and is a psychopath. And he's a homosexual, which makes for some really funny running gags where he keeps talking about, you know, explicitly what he wants to do sexually to men right in front of all these tough gangsters. And they're just kind of rolling their eyes and they just can't believe some of the stuff that's coming out of his mouth. But the Cray brothers, they ran all kinds of rackets in London in the 50s and 60s. It's being called the British Goodfellas, and with good reason. It has some really neat narration. It's sort of driven by music of the period. It has a lot of long shots and some amazing stuff going on cinematically. It's directed by Brian Helgeland. Am I saying his name right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who I have a soft spot for.
Yeah, he won an Oscar for writing L.A. Confidential, and he also was nominated for adapting Mystic River.
He made me some money.
He made you some money. Oh, that's right. Oh, and Jim was on Who Wants to Be a Billionaire. There was a question about Brian Helgeland, which
made
Jim,
me some green.
There you go. Did you ever thank him for doing that?
I will when I see him. Yeah. So, yes.
But again, Tom Hardy, and this is the best performance I've seen by an actor this year, is what Tom Hardy does here. And he was, of course, in Mad Max, which is still my favorite film of the year. So he's having a heck of a good year, that guy. Yeah. But like I say, what he does with these two characters, I mean, there's a scene where these guys are having a fist fight with each other, and you just think, well, why the heck did they do this?
So this beats the Armie Hammer in the Social Network as the Winklevoss twins.
Or was it Jeremy Irons in
Dead Ringers?
Dead Ringers, and that was 20 years ago.
Or Michael Keaton in Multiplicity, maybe.
Wow. Yeah.
I would pull that out of nowhere.
Yeah, but what he does is just amazing. I'm sure, I assume Tom Hardy would get nominated. And,
well,
you know,
he's also in The Revenant coming out.
That's right.
And yeah, there's already talk that from people who have seen it, it's not Leo's movie, it's to watch out for Tom Hardy.
Wow, that'll be a triple threat from Mr. Hardy this year. It's interesting to compare Legend with Black Mass, which was the other sort of true gangster movie that came out earlier this year. You know, what Tom Hardy, you know, and Johnny Depp got a lot of acclaim for that, but what Tom Hardy does makes Johnny Depp look like amateur hour. This is such a better film than that. And it's really not all that, well, I shouldn't say it's not that violent. There's not that many murders in Legend. These guys only killed a couple of people, but they go after others with hammers and brass knuckles. So there's some shocking scenes in it.
Well, that's what I'd heard, that the violence was a little over the top, but you're saying it's really not. It's you don't think it was is brushing up against NC-17 or something like that?
No, not at all. Yeah, not at all. Yeah. It's a less violent film than Black Mass, but
the hair and makeup did a great job. If you go and you Google, you know, the twins, and you see the real, oh my God, he's just dead ringer.
Well, but they don't look like, I mean, Reggie has sort of a fatter face and a crooked nose. I mean, it's not just one's wearing glasses and one isn't.
There's more to it.
You can tell these guys are different, and it's the same actor. It's just amazing.
Now, this is superior to the film about the Krays from 20 years ago, wasn't
it? Yeah, Martin Kemp.
Yeah, it was one
and
of them.
I forget his brother's name, but they were played by the Kemp brothers, who were musicians, actually.
Spandau Ballet.
But Tom Hardy, I mean, he does a better. It seems like two actors are playing him in Legend more than it seemed like two actors were playing him in The Krays when two actors were playing him in The Krays. I mean, that's how good of a job Tom Hardy does. I think they really played down the homosexual angle in The Krays, if I remember.
Anybody have note besides David Thewlis in it?
Emily Browning.
Oh, yes.
She's the female lead.
Sucker Punch.
Yeah, and she plays Reggie Cray's wife. I think I got the Reggie and Ronnie mixed up earlier. Ronnie's the crazy homosexual one, and Reggie's actually the other one. She plays Reggie's wife, and she's the narrator as well.
Okay.
And there's a kind of a crazy twist involving her character later on in the film. And she's quite good. Yeah, Sucker Punch and a few others.
Sleeping Beauty.
She's an attractive young actress. And then Chaz Palminteri comes in, and he actually plays an American gangster that comes to England and is wanting the Cray brothers to fence these stolen bearer bonds. And he's really good, too, and he just thinks these guys are nuts. And he's in it. He's in it for a couple of really funny scenes. So that opens a week from Wednesday. I will be reviewing that. No, Michael Hafner will be reviewing that. I hope Michael likes it as much as I did, because I think it's going to probably end up in my top 10 list. So check that out a week from Wednesday. Also, let's review Trumbo.
Are you not, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
Many questions can be answered yes or no only by a moron or a slave.
No studio will ever employ a member of the Communist Party.
Decent Americans feel that Hollywood is just a haven for overpaid traitors.
Jim saw Trumbo. Jim, how was Trumbo?
Trumbo is okay. It's a biography, but it's told in kind of a standard way. We mentioned Black Mass earlier. Black Mass seemed to be just sort of checking off events as it went along, and this film sort of has the same problem. It's like, then I did this, then I did that, then I did this. Bryan Cranston, if you're a fan of his from Breaking Bad, this is certainly essential viewing. It starts around the late 40s. Bryan Cranston plays Dalton Trumbo, this celebrated screenwriter, and one of his most famous credits up to that time was A Guy Named Joe, which they remade as Always, the Spielberg film. But as the film starts, he's getting signed in this exclusive contract by Louis B. Mayer, and everything's kind of coming up roses. And then the witch hunts started, the communist witch hunts, and he was convicted of contempt of Congress and had to do some time. And he was part sort of the leader of the Hollywood Ten. Yeah, say Cranston's very good in it. What's surprising is Michael Stuhlbarg, yes, who we really enjoyed in Steve Jobs and Pawn Sacrifice earlier this year, plays Edward G. Robinson.
Yes, I love that casting.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it looks like they're trying to suggest Edward G. in the makeup, but he's not doing it. Hey, Donald, hey, see? Yeah, he's not doing that.
This is a 1950s era Edward G. Robinson.
Yeah. So he's still somewhat of a big star, but he's you know, it's long ago were the days of Little Rico and Little Caesar and all that. He's a major force in it. Also, you get to see some other big stars of the time.
Kirk Douglas. I saw in the trailer.
Kirk Douglas is in. I forgot to note the fellow's actor, name that plays him, but he suggests him. He's not doing an impression of him, but you know, with his stance and everything. Same with I think it's David James Elliott, Jag from TV's fame or TV fame. He is playing John Wayne, who the head of the American, you know, Purity Committee or something like that, who's trying to roust the commies from you know, Hollywood.
The Duke did not like commies.
That's true. But there's a great sequence in which Trumbo, almost walks into John Wayne as he's coming out of a speech. You know, John Wayne mentions the war, and he says, "Well, Eddie was over there, reporting, and I was doing report. So where were you during the war, Duke?" And he just kind of glares at him, and Dalton Trumbo says, "Excuse me while I take off my glasses in case you'd like to punch me."
So
very funny.
And Helen Mirren plays.
Helen Mirren is Hedda Hopper.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I hear great
another
things.
Another queen, yes, the queen of Hollywood, and she is vicious and evil, and wanting to put
she was
Dalton
the first.
Away. There's a great actor that's playing Otto Preminger, too.
Yes.
I have to find out.
And his wife is played by Diane Lane.
Oh, Diane Lane is his wife. She's kind of playing the dutiful wife. She's sort of being his conscience when Dalton is sort of embarks on a career under assumed names.
Is this a comprehensive biography, or does it take place over a specific period of time?
Yeah, it's basically from 47 to about 1960, 61.
They touch on Johnny Got Your Gun?
Yeah, they do. They show the book cover for that, and they mention that he had gotten an award. And then in the final scene, it jumps to 1970, in which he's getting an award, I think, from the Writers Guild of America. Kind of irked me a little bit, because it's one of those deals where he's doing this flowery speech about, you know, what's happened in his life, and in the audience is everyone that, you know, there's Edward G. Robinson, and I should mention John Goodman as one of the King brothers. He and Stephen Root play the King brothers, and they took in Dalton Trumbo when he was blacklisted, but of course Dalton had to, you know, do assumed names and you know, write sort of low budget action, you know, B movie potboilers, and he was able to get work for all of his buddies, and he was sending out his kids as sort of delivery people because the studio people couldn't be seen with him anywhere.
Okay, so you're going to be reviewing Trumbo for WeAreMovieGeeks.com?
Yeah, I'm probably gonna give it four out of five stars. Uh-huh. Somebody was mentioning it's kind of reminiscent of some of the HBO, you know, movies like the Rat Pack, in which
the Liberace one,
or the Well, it's not as good as the Liberace one, that's for certain. But like I say, for Bryan Cranston fans, it's a must see.
All right, Jim also saw. Jim sees everything.
I see you all.
Jim saw Brooklyn, which opens
we
Friday.
Both did.
Oh, you saw Michelle saw Brooklyn. Did you like Brooklyn, Michelle?
Okay, let me talk about this. Okay, there are not enough adjectives to describe this delightful movie.
Well, I mean, we've only got
charming.
About 20 minutes left.
It's lovely. It's a joy. Brooklyn tells the story of Els Lacey, played by Saoirse Ronan, who in the 1950s, Ireland and New York has to choose between two men and two countries.
I'm away to America. My sister Rose arranged it.
I can't buy you a future. I can't buy you the kind of life you need.
But you'll come see me there one day.
Yes.
Passport, please. Step this way. Next, please.
One of the guys is charismatic Italian plumber Tony, played by Emery Cohen of Place Beyond the Pines. Yeah. While the other is the reserved yet sensitive Irishman Jim Farrell, played by
Domhnall
Gleeson,
and who will soon be seen in
Star Wars. And we saw footage of him in the last couple of TV spots and the preview Disney had on Friday night. Both are making a case for Elle's love. So the movie is from director John Crowley, who did Intermission, and he partners with writer Nick Hornby, who did An Education and About a Boy. The movie, it's just a great film.
What about the look of it, Michelle? Wasn't it just gorgeous?
It is. The greens and the blues, they just permeate the screen.
It is a golden 1952, I think. Isn't the setting of it? And it is just golden.
It is.
They even mentioned some Hollywood films in it. They mentioned about going to see The Quiet Man.
The score is from Michael Brook. It's the delightful score. He did Perks of a Wallflower.
Yeah, The Perks of Being a Wallflower, yes. Yeah,
Into the Wild. It just, you know, and two of the highlights are of the film is actress who I adore, Julie Walters.
Yes, the landlady.
The landlady.
Oh, she's wonderful.
And Tony's little brother, played by James Giancono, who the little smart mouth younger brother.
We don't like Irish.
But it's a great film. I think Academy, it's playing really well from what I've read. It's playing really well with Academy members. So look for her and the film come Oscar season.
And
now.
And who's reviewing that for Weird Movie Geeks?
Kate Marquis will be reviewing.
So, yeah. Oh, did you mention Jim Broadbent as the priest?
Another highlight.
Sort of is able to get her into the States. And, oh, there's a couple of terrific performances by American actors.
Exactly.
Jessica Perret, who TV fans know as Megan Draper,
has a terrific Mad Men.
Mad Men. Yeah, terrific role in it as sort of the floor walker, the manager at the department store where she works. And I believe, I don't know her name offhand, but one of the actresses from the TV series Arrow is in it, and she's very good.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a terrific flick.
Okay, well, good. So Jim and Michelle both recommend Brooklyn, which starts Friday. I haven't seen Brooklyn. I'm going to go see it. A couple of movies that open this week that we are going to see tonight. I am seeing The Secret in Their Eyes.
LAPD just found an unidentified female body in a garage dumpster.
What are we doing here, guys?
Body appears to have been bleached inside and out.
Ray, what is it? What?
Which stars Julia Roberts and Nicole Kidman and Chiwi Ejiofor. And it's actually a remake of a Spanish film that I reviewed for WeirdMovieGeeks.com 4 or 5 years ago. I think that may have been the title of the Spanish film.
Yeah, I'm thinking.
But I don't really remember that much about it. I think it's a murder mystery, but I think it gets solved like in the middle and then it goes off in other directions, if I remember correctly. But I will be reviewing that this Friday for WeirdMovieGeeks.com. Jim is seeing tonight The Night Before.
The new comedy with Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, first team up since, what was it, 50-50?
Yep.
Was there?
Anthony Mackie.
I hope Anthony does better in this than he did in I Love the Coopers. He has to be better in this than he was
And Miley Cyrus is in it singing.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
She's singing and twerking?
That's right. Probably. She's a sensation.
Yeah.
It looks funny.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it looks pretty amusing. I like his, you know, most of the guys are wearing Christmas sweaters, but of course, Seth Rogen has to wear a Hanukkah sweater, so he's got the Star of David on his sweater. It's very funny.
I'm sure it'll be funnier than Love the Coopers.
Oh, boy. Root Canal's funnier than Love the Coopers.
That's
you
right.
You guys are just not going to drop
Legend
it.
Legend is funnier than Love the Coopers.
I'll bet it is. Yeah.
Let's see. By the Sea, which I'm seeing tomorrow with Angelina Jolie Pitt, who used to be known as Angelina Jolie, and her husband Brad Pitt, which is probably also funnier than Love the Coopers. We're seeing that tomorrow, and I'll be reviewing that Friday. I don't know a whole lot about it. I think it's Angelina and Brad walking hand in hand on the beach for 2.5 hours, from what I understand.
Oh, no, they're watching Newlyweds.
Oh, okay. I don't really know anything about it.
Frolicking.
Oh, yeah.
Well, except they argue a lot in it, I hear. So, yeah. All right. But, yeah, so then the Hunger Games finale is
yeah, that opens Friday as well.
Yeah, and then Wednesday, I don't know if you're seeing it, I'm going to go see Creed on Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
Night.
You're not built for this. These boys come in here, they got to fight for life. People die in the ring. Your daddy died in the ring.
I don't know him. Ain't got nothing to do with me.
I heard about a third fight between you and Apollo behind closed doors. Is that true?
How do you know all this?
I'm a son.
Yes, I am too.
Friday, right? I can't go too. To that. I wish I could. Yeah.
Melissa Thompson has already seen that, and she's a huge Rocky fan, so she'll be reviewing
she's
that.
Gonna review that.
Yeah, nice profile of Sly Stallone on CBS Sunday Morning.
Yes,
if you get a chance to see that. Yeah.
All right. So this is the unofficial sixth Rocky film, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I keep on telling a friend of mine, I don't want to see Rocky. Well, he's a supporting character.
Yeah.
You know,
you
he
can
sees
tell
the
that
coach.
From the trailer. Mm-hmm. The trailer's kind of clever too, because you're just like, what is this? It's a boxing movie about this black boxer, and then all of a sudden Rocky shows up and say, ah. And then they start even play some of the Bill Conti music towards the end of the trailer. So I think they're doing a great job marketing. I have a feeling this movie might make a lot of money, Creed.
Yeah. And it opens right before Thanksgiving, and so you get the long holiday weekend.
Yeah. And now there's also a screening this week for us of Danish Girl, but I imagine that's not coming out till mid-December, is it?
In St. Louis, right.
Yeah, and that's got Alicia Vikander.
Yes, who might be the girl with the dragon tattoo. I might be
that
taking
would,
over
there. I just would love that casting.
Yeah, they're talking about doing another one in that series, but it's not going to have Daniel Craig or David Fincher.
Or what about Rooney Mara?
No,
they've all bowed out.
They want to revamp. Oh, it's been about what 4 years since the last.
Yeah, something
one.
Like that.
I guess
that,
they want to take the budget down a little bit, and I guess those the people from the first film might be too costly. So.
Okay. All right. So those are the movies that we'll be reviewing and we'll be talking about most likely next week on the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. One other film that Jim and I saw last Friday was called Anomalisa, and it opened. I don't think it opens till January, so we'll probably review it again at length. But it's pretty remarkable and pretty weird.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it's something I just can't get out of my head.
What is it to be human? What is it to ape?
Each person you speak to has had a childhood.
Each has a body. Each body has aches.
Look for what is special about each individual.
I think you're extraordinary.
Why?
I don't know yet. It's just obvious to me that you are.
Very dreamlike. It's like you're kind of floating in and out of consciousness.
Yeah, it's Charlie Kaufman's film, and it's stop-motion animation, but if you're expecting box trolls or Paranorman or something like that, it's the most grounded stop-motion animation film ever made, that's for sure. Why he made it in stop-motion is probably only known to him and his conscience.
I think I understand why, yeah. But if I mention it, I think I might give away too much of the plot.
Yeah.
But, from what I could understand from the end credits, it's actually based on a stage play that Kaufman did a few years ago. I guess, well, it's all set in...
But did the stage play star a puppet?
No, the thing that's... You know, the conformity that I think I can mention that that's explored in the film could really be best shown with the stop motion, I think.
You know, technique-wise, it was bizarre because it didn't look like any stop motion film I'd seen. In fact, when I was watching it, I assumed it was CGI designed to look like stop motion because it didn't have that tactileness that most stop motion has. You know, usually when you see stop motion, you can, even in the best stop motion, you sort of see the thumbprints of the animator, and I think that's what sort of adds to the charm of stop motion.
Yeah, a little bit of a hesitation in the movement.
Yeah, I didn't get any of that in this film. No. And I'm wondering how they made this film. I'm going to have to do a little research.
Yeah. I'm wondering if they had to shoot a lot of footage of live actors to sort of mimic their motions because it looks so real at times. Mm. It's really amazing. And I was just astounded. There's a scene in which the main character meets these people in the bar of the hotel, and there are about... 20 people or so in these shots all moving and talking at the different tables, and it's just technically it's just astounding.
It is. It's an amazing movie, and I'm sure it'll be in my top 10 list. But let's stop talking about Anomalisa for now because I don't think it opens till January. We'll give it a more thorough review the week before it opens. This weekend at the Late Night Grindhouse, Friday and Saturday night over at the High Point at midnight, is a slasher movie from 1982 called Madman.
A madman.
His name is Mars.
Mad Man Mars.
Mars! Mad Man Mars! Here we are! Come and get us, Mad Man!
I'm not really familiar with Mad Man. I can't figure out if I've seen this movie or not. I don't think I have. I was sort of obsessed with going to the drive-in back around 1981, 82, and I don't recall seeing that one, although I called my buddy Roger McWilliams, who was also going to the drive-in all the time, and he thinks it did play in St. Louis, so we'll see. It stars Gaylen Ross, who was the female lead of Dawn of the Dead in 1978. It's about a killer with an axe, and it's a 35mm print, a newly struck 35mm print, apparently, that they made the Blu-ray from. So I'm going to go. I'm really excited to see a 35mm print of a classic slasher movie.
When you mentioned it, I was confusing it with Maniac, the film that they've shown.
With Joe Spinell. Is Madman. I was a little confused with Madman, which
the poster is kind of disturbing.
Typical late night grindhouse movie. So maybe we can talk about that again on Monday because I'm not going to miss it.
When you mentioned the actress, I recalled when they did the remake of Dawn of the Dead in the shopping mall. One of the women's clothing shop was called Gaylen Ross. Yeah, that was a nice touch, I thought.
I didn't catch that, but that's pretty clever. Michelle wants to talk a little bit about the Academy's Governors Awards, which were held this past weekend. Michelle?
The 7th Annual Governors Awards were presented in Hollywood, California this past Saturday. These are the honorary awards that used to be handed out during the Oscars, during the four-hour Oscar telecast. But it made for such great live TV. I loved it. But, since they've moved it to a separate ceremony, it's become a big hit. It's become the first Oscar stopover for potential nominees. The Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award went to Debbie Reynolds, and the honorary Oscars went to Spike Lee and Jenna Rollins. The honorary award is the Oscar statuette. It's for contributions to the Academy, and the Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award is for humanitarian efforts throughout the industry.
For the community and all that, yes.
Exactly. In 2009, the Academy broke out the Governor's Awards in a separate untelevised ceremony just because of constraints and everything, and so they have this separate ceremony every year.
Now, this is separate than from the technical awards, which will have earlier in the year.
Exactly. It wasn't an immediate success, but now it's become this big thing, and everybody shows up. They can nominate up to four people each year. This year they went with three. On hand were Meryl Streep, Kate Blanchett, Jane Fonda, Wesley Snipes, Samuel L. Jackson, Denzel Washington, Brie Larson, the cast from Straight Outta Compton, Helen Mirren for Trumbo. They showed up. So Academy President Cheryl Boone Isaacs opened up with a tribute to the Paris bombings over from Friday. She called for she also called for diversity in the film industry. Making headlines, she announced a new initiative called A2020, a five-year plan to actively increase diversity in Hollywood, and she asked for the leaders in the room, all of studio heads, to help her. So Spike Lee was there to accept his award. He was introduced by Denzel Washington, Samuel L. Jackson, and Wesley Snipes. It was the funniest part that we have the video posted on our website. Debbie Reynolds was not able to attend, supposedly recovering from surgery, so Jane Fonda and Meryl Streep introduced the segment and they presented it to her granddaughter. So Carrie Fisher was also there.
Mark Hamill there?
No. Nope. Still not seeing him. Okay. Kate Blanchett honored Jenna Rollins for her work in film, and she was presented with her honorary Oscar from her son, Nick Cassavetes.
Okay.
So it was a big Hollywood night on Saturday night.
Sounds like it. We weren't invited.
No. But we will be there for Oscar week.
Okay, good. Well, yes, that's something to look forward to. We were invited to the St. Louis International Film Festival. In fact, we were involved. WeAreMovieGeeks.com covers that film festival more than all the other outlets in town combined, I'm convinced. We review the movies. We interview the filmmakers. We're judges. And you guys each presented at last night's End of Fest Awards party. And that's where I drank all the Urban Chestnut beer, which has caused this headache. They gave Best Narrative Film to, what was it, The Last Mensch?
Yes,
See that?
No,
I didn't see it. I heard good
Kate
things about it.
Kate was talking about it, but I can't remember if she had seen it or not. I don't think she had.
No, I thought she had. Okay.
Oh, maybe she had. Okay.
But that sounds interesting.
Yeah,
you know?
That was kind of a surprise. I don't, you know, why they didn't give it to Carol or Annalisa or Brooklyn.
I guess the big studio stuff is in the running.
Slumdog Millionaire won Best Film.
Yeah, they usually go with a big studio movie.
Or 8 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh, interesting. Well, The Last Minch. All right. Well, I saw Carol, which was fantastic. That's Todd Haynes' new movie. Mm-hmm. I saw Legend, which I just talked about. And Anomalisa played there. That was the closing film. But we saw it at a critics screening, and all
Lady
three of those.
Lady in the Van also showed.
Oh, yeah, that sold out.
45 Years. Those are both, that's a Charlotte Rampling's film that's gotten a lot of Oscar buzz. Lady in the Van has got a lot of Oscar buzz for Maggie Smith as well.
Oh, okay.
So those both showed.
But, of course, the highlight of the St. Louis International Film Festival was the Todd Browning tribute Friday night.
Yeah.
Jim was there.
I was.
I was the host. And the Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra hit it out of the park with their score for Todd Browning's The Unknown, the silent film from 1927 with Lon Chaney, which I think really did shock a lot of people. I know my kids were imitating Lon Chaney all weekend long in the scene where he realizes that he's cut his own arms off unnecessarily. So it is the most bizarre.
He's got that forced smile.
Yeah, it goes on and on, and it's just devastating. I mean, Lon Chaney, that is just amazing in that film.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I talked about how, you know, Lon Chaney had died in 1930, and had he lived, you know, the whole face of Universal, the golden age of horror would have been so different.
Yeah.
And I think people enjoyed Freaks as well.
Gooba gobble, gooba gobble.
We accept her, we accept her.
Gooba gobble, gooba gobble.
One of us.
So that was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, had your family seen that one before?
No. I don't show my kids Freaks, but they enjoyed it. Actually, my younger daughter slept through Freaks. She did. She slept through the whole thing. All right. So that was a lot of fun.
And a good crowd, too.
Yeah. We had a big crowd there. That was it.
It was a great festival. They had a lot of big movies.
They had some
great local documentary shorts. And the shorts shown at SLIF is also for Oscar consideration.
Yeah. And Jim, you were on the committee to pick the best narrative out of, 9 films for the Joe Pollack Award.
Yeah, the Joe Pollack Narrative. Yeah.
What did you guys end up giving it to?
Well, it was a close one. We had 8 films actually to choose from. I was really pitching for Embrace of the Serpent, this South American film all about traveling around the Amazon in 1909 and 1940.
Yeah, you talked about that last week.
Yeah, that's a very, very good film. But I was in the minority. The majority wanted to go with the entry from France, which was Once in a Lifetime, which is about this class of high school students, and they're all, you know, kind of rowdy, and they're, you know, picking on each other, and they're from, you know, different backgrounds, and the teacher decides to unite them in this academic competition, in which they have to turn in a report, and they decide the subject is going to be the children, what happened to the children of France during the Nazi occupation. Sort of unites them to find out about all the stuff they never knew about. And there's an incredible scene, which I think sold it for the other people on the jury, in which the class gets a visit from one of the survivors, who's played by an actual survivor, giving his real testimony. And it's very powerful. So it's a good film. You know, I'd still like the stuff, cruising up the Amazon and, you know, doing the crazy stuff with the natives and all that. But this is a good film. We also had Band of Robbers, the American comedy to choose from. We had The Summer of Sengail, which is a story of two young girls in love in Lithuania. And The Dinner, this Italian domestic drama. The Kindergarten Teacher, a thriller from Israel. And Thebe, this Arab film set in during World War I, which will be playing, I believe, at Webster University in the next week or so.
Yeah.
You reviewed it.
Yeah,
it was a good review.
Speaking of Webster University, and this is off the subject, they're showing a 35mm print of Mark of Zara with Douglas Fairbanks with live music on December 13th. So I'll talk about that again. I just wanted to...
That's not the Rats and People again, though.
No, it's not the Rats and People. I think it's an organist.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
So that's going to be amazingly good. I'll put it up an article about that at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. I was on the committee for judging documentaries. We had to watch 8 documentaries to give the one that we liked the most, the Joe Williams documentary award. So we watched 8 documentaries, and like you, the winner was pretty low on my list, actually. It was called Romeo is Bleeding, which I assume it must be a line from Romeo and Juliet, because there was another movie called Romeo is Bleeding from 1993 with Gary Oldman and Lena Olwin. Yeah, she cut her own arm off. Kind of like The Unknown, actually. It was about these high school students who, you know, in this urban city, and they took the play Romeo and Juliet and they rewrote it with, street vernacular. And it was just, I really hated this documentary. But I was in the minority. It was number one on a couple of the judges' list, and I didn't really like any of the documentaries I sat through. So my number one, I just didn't feel passionate enough to argue with these guys about it if they wanted to give it to this documentary. But it just seemed sort of abrasive the way these kids were shouting angrily these lines from Shakespeare that they had rewritten with street language, and I wasn't that impressed with it at all. I was bored. But next year, let's put me on the narrative committee, and Jim, you can get on the documentary committee, because I didn't like any of these documentaries. The documentary that I saw that I liked the most wasn't one of those 8. It was actually the freaking Archie documentary.
Archie's Betty.
Archie's Betty.
Hey, we got to meet Gerald Perry last night at the closing ceremony. He's a nice fella.
Yeah, he was a nice guy and a nice documentary. You know, I just like that because it was just such a simple, you know, throwback to a simpler time. And, you know, let's look at Archie Comics and see who inspired these characters that Bob Montana had come up with back in the 1940s. And
a very sweet film.
I forgot
to mention one of the narratives was that I was really high on was Sea Fog, a North Korean thriller.
Oh, yeah.
That's very well done, too. It's from it's produced and written by the fellow that did Snowpiercer and The Host.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a pretty strong film, too. But, well, yeah, Archie's Betty is fun.
Yeah, and they ended up giving Best Documentary last night to Romeo is Bleeding, which is the same documentary that got the Joe Williams Award from the committee that I was on. So I guess everybody liked that documentary except me.
Oh, well.
Yeah. You got to go along with the... Got to do this democratically, I guess.
Well, like I say, our narrative panel was a lot closer. It was basically 2-2, and one of the people there had to make the deciding vote, and she was really torn between Serpent and Once in a Lifetime. Hmm. So it was a little not as much controversy there. Mm-hmm. I guess.
You guys had fun at the party last night?
I did.
Sure.
Yeah. The beer was flowing, and the filmmakers were visiting, and the sound system didn't work at all when they were announcing who the awards, because I had to ask who the heck won what.
They'll hopefully have a better sound venue for next year.
Yeah. So we always enjoy the St. Louis International Film Festival. It's a lot of work for the guys over at Cinema St. Louis. They do a great job, and it's a lot of work for us. We do a great job. Doggone it.
Yeah, and for, a little Midwestern town, they really get some good film.
Some big, it's a big lineup.
Yeah. So this is more worthy of, big urban center.
It's a big film festival.
It's a major one.
It is, definitely.
Yeah.
And prestigious. What else can we talk about? How about this new Star Wars Force Awakens?
That comes out about a month.
I've heard about this movie.
Yeah.
Entertainment Weekly released some new covers.
Adam Sandler in this movie?
There's some new covers from Entertainment Weekly that showed up in the mail. They keep release. They keep like, no more trailers, no more TV spots. Sure enough,
they get a new TV spot. Yeah.
We got a new TV spot. We have a new trailer from Japan. Mm. The new TV spot shows more.
Does it show Mark Hamill though on the new TV spot?
Okay. Nope. The Disney Channel on Friday night with one of their kid shows showed a preview, like a behind the scenes, which had more new footage.
Wow.
So it shows up, and the word is no one will get a screening of it.
Except that guy who was dying.
Yes, which was...
Which is like a work in progress.
Away, actually, which was nice.
So that was nice of whoever was in charge.
That was Disney
that
and
decision,
Lucasfilm and J.J. Abrams.
But they're not going to show it to the press?
Nope.
We're afraid you're going to ruin the spoilers. No, we're not going to do that.
That shows a lack of self-confidence, I guess. Or maybe they just figure they don't need to.
Maybe that's greed.
They don't need to. So the first people seeing it will be December 17th at 7 p.m.
Did you guys get tickets? Did you get tickets, Jim?
I think Michael did.
So. I think Michael did.
Yes.
Did you get tickets, Michelle?
No.
I don't think he's doing the marathon, is he? Theaters are going to run all 6 before this one. So that would be a little much for me, I think. Well, especially for 3.
There is a clever trailer somebody put together a fanboy trailer where it takes all the new footage that we have seen in all the official trailers and put that all together to make this big 6-minute trailer. It's fabulous. Yeah. It just, and it's done in sequential order.
Wow.
So it's kind of like this little mini movie and people have gone wild for it.
But yeah, the thought, well, that whole excuse, oh, that this critics are going to, you know, release all these, you know, little things. No, we're not going to do that.
It's critic proof. They don't need to show it to us. So,
well, they should.
So we'll be covering Star Wars much more in detail. We got to wrap this up, doggone it. But we'll be back next week. We'll be reviewing By the Sea, The Secrets in Their Eyes, The Night Before. We can talk about Mockingjay 2 and whatever we want to talk about. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And listen again next week.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, black leather.
Oh, naughty state. Hello, Don. Hey, 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 hey.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock.